So, good morning, Bart. Thanks so much for coming in. Bart is one of the organizers, facilitators of the Green Party of New Orleans. Really excited to have you in the studio today.
Good morning.
Yeah, it worked out so well that we're the day after Super Tuesday.
Yeah.
So, we got elections are on the minds and hearts of America this morning. And, but yeah, I'm curious, I guess, just to start, sort of what your interest has been with the Green Party in particular.
Well, I always like to point out for people who don't know that the Green Party is really an international movement, an international phenomenon that is working for ecological wisdom, for grassroots democracy, as well as social justice and peace. Those are movements that are worldwide and that a lot of people have been putting a lot of effort and energy into at a very grassroots level. And those movements sometimes, though, run afoul of trying to engage with the government, that actually, so the purpose of the Green Party then is to give some kind of electoral expression to those movements. We don't need to reduplicate the movements themselves, but we want to provide access to the electoral system, particularly in America. That can be pretty difficult, as you might have seen, last night. If you're following the election returns, we hear a lot about Democrats and Republicans, and these are really very massive entrenched parties representing massively entrenched political interests. But grassroots views and they don't get a lot of as much airing. So the purpose of a party like the Green Party, a grassroots party, is to engage the electoral process and try to bring these movements for ecology and for justice into the electoral process and actually get some candidates running who reflect those movements.
Yeah, and so I mean, in light of this election with Bernie Sanders, like it sounds like some of the things you're talking about he might have in common with them, but what are the distinctions that you see between him and the Green Party?
Well, yeah, right. A lot of the stuff that Bernie is talking about is very much from the Green Party platform, or a little bit of it, I should say. I went to see him when he came here to New Orleans last summer, and I was kind of brought there under false pretenses. Actually, I thought I was going to see Bernie Mac, the comedian, but it turns out he's been dead for a few years, so I was obviously misinformed. But anyway, I was really turned on by his message, about income inequality. Which again, that's a social justice issue. And he talked for an hour and really hit that social justice message again and again and again. And it was very inspiring. But of course, that's only one issue. And the Green Party, as I mentioned, is trying to provide a broad address a broad array of issues, because there really are there's more to it than that. There's more that we need than that. Although that's very important. Social justice is one of the main things that the Green Party is about. But he in that hour-long speech, he spoke about ecological issues only one sentence. And there was a smattering of stuff about grassroots democracy, about the need to reform, because he's not really a Democrat. So he understands, I think, that we need to reform our electoral process, that this the whole system right now, the way things are structured, it gives prominence to our two parties, and everybody else is kind of shut out of that process. I'm glad that we have two parties and not just one, right? Two dominant parties, because the one-party state is really a frightening concept, but the two-party state is not. We could do better than that. We really need a diversity of views. So we need electoral reform. We need reform to our democratic processes to actually have more democracy, actually have some democracy. That would be great. And of course, about peace. as far as peace goes, you know, Bernie Sanders, he didn't say a thing. He didn't say a thing about his foreign policy and so forth. And I think that's probably where you would find the greatest divergence from what the Green Party stands for.
Mm.
But the number one thing that I walked away with after that rally, you know, everybody was all pumped up at that Bernie Sanders rally, and it's been inspiring to see so many people across the country getting involved and supporting Bernie, supporting, you know, what he's fighting for. And he's talking about it being a revolution and all this stuff. What I'm concerned about is when Hillary Clinton gets the nomination,
mm-hmm.
which I believe she will,
mm-hmm.
What happens to all that energy?
Mm.
I believe, you know, I imagine what happens is that Bernie Sanders advises all his followers, all his supporters, to vote for the Democratic nominee, and that the energy of that movement kind of dissipates. It doesn't lead to long-lasting change. Now, they said, you know, well, Hillary's moved in her positions a little bit because of that, and, you know, maybe she has, maybe she hasn't. I think once... I don't even want to speculate on that so much. What I want to say is that building a long-term movement is a different proposition,
mm-hmm.
and that I would like to see that energy,
mm-hmm.
those Bernie supporters,
mm-hmm.
have something long-term that represents them. And so that's, to me, where the Green Party comes in. We just need to let people know that we're here, that there is a party that represents these interests that you can get involved in.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what, that's the whole reason that I wanted to, you know, talk to you this morning.
Yeah.
It's just to let people know that we're out here and that there is a party that represents these social justice issues that's here for the long term.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the problems that have led us to our current crises are really big and long and deep. They have a long history, and it takes a lot of work and a really kind of deep effort to get out of them. I don't think that I don't want to cast aspersions on any other candidates or any other parties, but I do think that we have to recognize what we're up against.
Yeah, and so what would you say? I feel like a constant critique I hear about third-party candidates is that they cause elections to go to the other way, like the example is always given in the 2000 election, that it was Ralph Nader's fault that Al Gore ended up losing that. I mean,
sure, the spoiler effect.
Yeah, right.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because you remind me that that's often something that I hear from people is like, you know, well, I can't have any good feelings about the Green Party because of what happened in 2000. Because Nader handed the election to Bush, that's a troubling way of looking at things. It makes a number of assumptions that I feel are incorrect. But the number one thing I would say is, look at all the Democrats who voted for Bush. There are far more Democrats who voted for Bush than there were who voted for Nader.
Mm.
So. We can't assume that all the people who voted for Nader would have voted for Gore. A lot of them would have stayed home and not voted at all. They were turned on by Nader's campaign because of what he was standing for, what he campaigned for. They might have, who knows what they would have done otherwise. But if Democrats had voted for Gore, he would have won. Well, a lot of them changed parties and voted for Bush. I'm talking specifically about, you know, Florida, which was a key state. I don't think Gore even won his home state. So in any event, the whole concept of democracy, of course, is that you get out there and you vote for who you believe represents you the most. And to try to be strategic about it, to try to say, well, I like this candidate the most, but I'm going to vote for somebody else. That doesn't make sense to me. That's why we need grassroots democracy reform. Right? That's why we need democratic reform to actually have more democracy systems. A lot of our stuff, especially for presidential elections, is winner take all. And that doesn't really make a lot of sense to me. I would rather see us, adopt some reforms to our voting processes, things such as instant runoff voting or preference voting. There are a number of different other systems that allow people to express their preferences and not have to attempt to be strategic.
Yeah, I literally like that point. Could you tell people what instant runoff is and what those things actually are? Because I feel like people don't really know.
Right. So a number of these proposed systems, and they vary in their details, but a number of these proposed reforms allow you to kind of rank your preferences. So you come in there and you see a number of different candidates, and there's maybe a grassroots candidate who doesn't have a lot of money that you really like. But you're afraid that candidate might not actually win. But you can mark her as your first preference, and then somebody else as your second preference, and somebody else even as your third preference. That's one way of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And then instead of just tallying up who got the most votes, you go through a kind of process of who got ranked number one the most, who got ranked number two, and so forth. And an even simpler version is just where you go in. It's called preference voting. Which I really like just because of the simplicity of it. You go in and say, here is who I would accept as a winner, right? Here's all the people I would accept to be governed by in the election. So you can check as many boxes as you want. Mm. That's basically what it comes down to. Mm. And whoever gets the most votes wins, right? But you can vote for more than one person is essentially what it goes. Well, why not?
Yeah.
So that's a simple reform that everybody can understand and get behind. If we had processes like that, then nobody would have any compunctions. But mm-hmm. I worry when people try to get too strategic in their voting because it can backfire on you. And people aren't really fully strategic. When they look at it, if you look at the presidential voting for our state, as many states, it's winner take all. So we know in Louisiana that all of our electoral votes are going to go to the GOP candidate. You know, I mean, that's really kind of a given. And what with polls and so forth, there's always a margin of error. And there are occasionally surprises, but some things are kind of locked up. And that's one of them. So all of our votes go, if all of our votes are going to Donald Trump or something, then what's the incentive at all? You know, strategically, you might as well just say, well, I'm going to vote for whoever I want. There should be no hesitation to vote for the candidate that you feel truly represents your interests.
Right.
On the other hand, our primary is coming up here in the state of Louisiana on Saturday, and I certainly wanted to distinguish that our primaries are not winner-take-all, right? So get out there and vote for who you want, and whether there's a GOP primary.
Yep.
There is a Democratic primary. You may notice, though, that there's no Green Party primary. And so I'm registered green. So on Saturday, I won't be voting. I can't vote because there's no primary for the Greens. And you may wonder, well, why not? And the rule is in Louisiana, you got to have 40,000 registered voters in your party to have a state-funded primary.
Huh. So how far are we from that?
We're a little ways away. I think there's about 2,000 registered Greens in the state of Louisiana.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's a good thing for people to know.
That's a good thing to know. But that's another example of how we could have some reforms.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why set the bar at 40,000? As long as is it really a matter of expense? Because as long as we're doing these elections, state-funded elections for the Republican Party and for the Democratic Party, how much extra does it really cost to have another slate of candidates on there? It doesn't seem like it would be a prohibitive, and it would promote more democracy.
Right. Right?
Because there are five parties recognized by the state of Louisiana. There's the Libertarian Party as well, and I believe the fifth party would be the Reform Party. Not sure, don't quote me.
Does the Libertarian have a primary?
No. So
they also nobody, haven't reached that level.
They have not reached that level.
Interesting.
So it's only Democrats and Republicans.
Right. Yeah, and I mean, it feels like the two-party system is, like, ingrained into our political system overall in such a deep way. Like, what is... How do you envision that breaking apart? I mean, because at the same moment, I feel like in this election, we're seeing the fraying begin. And certainly, you know, there's a referendum on the GOP right now about where their party is going to be going next.
Yeah, I've heard people say that that these candidates are going to destroy the party, the Republican Party as we know it, and who knows about the Democratic Party? Maybe them too. So you're absolutely right, and. There are various, I've seen different analyses, including some mathematical models that are kind of sophisticated that show that our system, our rules that we have in the United States government really favor a two-party system.
Mm-hmm.
And we're so used to that. It is so ingrained that it becomes, people feel like it's a fact of nature. It's just the way it is. And in a sense, it's become that. But there have been periods of upheaval in our nation's history where one party gets displaced and there's a struggle. And then we get back to a two-party system, but it's a different two parties.
Right.
So that can happen.
Mm-hmm.
If there is a... And it seems like, you know, we're ripe for some upheaval.
Mm-hmm.
So it could happen that we have some kind of upheaval like that, and then we end up with a displacement. One of the parties that we know today dissolves, falls apart, and some kind of other party, and there's a kind of reshuffling happens. But what we really need, I feel, is to change some of these fundamental laws that reinforce this two-party system, this duopoly. If we really want a multi-party system, a system which is more democratic and represents a broader range of views and gives people more options and more reasons to actually engage in the political process, I mean, voting is the least we can do, then I think we need more substantial reforms.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that gets into some policies that are it's pretty hard to even imagine us going there anytime soon.
Well,
for example, a parliamentary system, something like that. That would be pretty deep and pretty difficult to get there. But some of the things that we could do in the meantime that would promote a greater range of views are opening up our debate system. You know, our debates are run by – it's not a nonpartisan debate system. It's a bipartisan debate system. So the debates, the presidential debates are run by the Presidential Debate Commission, which is run by the Democratic and Republican Party. And they will let in a third party candidate only if they're polling at like some high numbers, some prohibitively high numbers. So it's kind of like a rigged system. You can't get the votes because you can't get people's attention.
Mm-hmm. Which brings me to the role of the media, which has been, I think, another referendum on this whole election cycle. And I'm curious sort of your perspective on that as it pertains to the Green Party in particular and then more broadly.
Well, it speaks to another reform that would be much easier to implement, and that's publicly funded elections.
Mm.
The current system, of course, we keep hearing about all the money in politics, and what is all the money about? It's mostly about media and media buys. So the media loves this system because they're getting huge amounts of money of advertisers, people buying ads on television and radio and so forth. And publicly funded elections would create an even playing field. So that instead of the best funded candidate winning, instead of just saying, well, you know, I'm going to buy my way into office, you would have an even playing field and different candidates would kind of have equal standing and could make their case and voters would be able to choose. Mm-hmm. People would be able to choose who they based on actually being able to hear their voices. Right now, the person with the most dollars can kind of drown out everybody else. And that's, you know, that's really not democracy.
Right. So what kind of things do you guys have going on the local level? I know there's something happening.
Well, we are going to be doing a voter registration drive this Saturday. Of course, Saturday, again, is the primary, presidential primary. There's probably some local elections here and there around the state. But it's too late, I think, to register to vote for the primary. No big deal. We're doing a voter. It's very much on people's minds. So if you want to vote in the big election in the fall, well, we're doing a voter registration drive. Of course, people can register for any party that they want. A lot of people have been so, you know, turned off by party politics that they're registering independent these days. But we'll encourage people to vote green, register green. But that's up to them. That's a personal choice. So you may wonder, where are we doing this great voter registration drive? Well, it's at an amazing event that we're very happy to promote, although we're not really involved in organizing it, and that is the 10th hike of the Lafitte Greenway.
Mm.
Now, I just want to make clear that we're not, the Green Party of New Orleans is not organizing the hike of the Greenway. Your listeners might get confused because, you know, Green Party, Green Way sounds like it's the same thing. It's not the same thing. The Green Party of New Orleans is a political party. The Green Way is a piece of, well, a physical infrastructure that has been built here in the heart of New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, runs from Armstrong Park all the way almost, you know, through Treme and Lafitte and Mid-City, almost into Lakeview. And the plan ultimately is to extend it into Lakeview. So at 10 a.m. on Saturday morning.
Wait, is it going to turn at Carrollton? Or
no, it crosses Carrollton.
It goes past Carrollton,
yeah.
Past the Winn-Dixie, so, and
mm-hmm,
then
yeah,
to where?
Absolutely. I'm intimately familiar with this land because in 2005, in May of 2005, I hiked from one end of this to the other with a couple friends, and that was what we call the first hike. And so that's why we're saying this is the 10th hike. But in a way, it's the first hike again, because this is the first hike on a built trail.
Mm-hmm.
Over the past years, 11 years now, hundreds of people, literally thousands of people have come out and hiked on a trail that doesn't exist. Right? They've used the power of their imagination to envision a trail there, and they kept doing it again and again, year after year, and now the trail has materialized.
Yeah.
It's almost like magic beneath our feet. Now there is a trail. Of course, there's been a huge amount of hard work by a lot of people to make that happen. That's how magic happens. It takes a lot of hard work.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the 10th hike. And, yeah, it starts at Armstrong Park in Congo Square, 10 a.m. They're going to have live music. They're going to have Greenway ambassadors who will guide groups down the Greenway to really fill them in on the rich history of this stretch of land. It goes, it's a trail then that goes through the Lehman Playground, across Claiborne, along, it opens up then on the other side of Claiborne to be this really wide space where an old switching yard used to be for the railroad.
Mm.
And this is a rails to trails project. It's mm-hmm. where the railroad used to be. Now that the rails are gone, we've got a trail for non-motorized transit, for people to walk, roller skate, bicycle, what have you. It keeps on going up past, you know, it crosses Broad, crosses Jeff Davis near the end where the bayou ends.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it intersects with the Jefferson Davis bicycle path,
right?
Which is kind of cool. And then it keeps going behind the post office there and behind those warehouses and so forth.
Yeah.
It gets up to Carrollton. It does cross Carrollton.
Mm-hmm.
It keeps on going past Massey's and the Winn-Dixie there and keeps going. And then it just stops at Alexander Street.
Okay.
But the hike does not stop at Alexander Street, right?
Okay.
The hike is going to continue a few more blocks to Second Line Brewing.
Okay.
This new brewery in Mid-City. Right now, it's the only brewery in Mid-City.
Okay.
Although I hear there's more coming.
As I heard, yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, it's Mid-City's only brewery. It's having the base camp block party. Okay. So that's where the hike ends. And the trail is intended to continue, by the way. We're going to continue that tradition of hiking on rough terrain where there isn't a trail and imagining a trail. Mm. But that last stretch is complicated because there's still live railroad there.
Okay.
That still services the Brickyard on Alexander Street, the Masonry Products. And that's staying there. But it can be a Rails with Trails project, but that involves negotiations with